Today on Straight Talk Africa, look at the new democratically elected president of Somalia. He's Muhammad Abdullahi Muhammad, better known as Farmajo, or cheese in Italian. The president says his priorities are combating corruption and restoring peace and stability in the Horn of Africa nation. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll discuss the recent political developments in Somalia.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails and Facebook comments. And we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Somalia's new president, Mohamed Farmajo, has declared a state of disaster in Somalia. Meanwhile, the current drought and food crisis is threatening the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. My colleague, Paul Sisko, has more.
Somalia is rapidly deteriorating, and the likelihood of famine is increasing. That, according to reports from the International Organization for Migration. The organization says a growing number of people are fleeing to Ethiopia in search of food and basic services. President Farmajo has his work cut out for him, and he knows it. The nation is still suffering from decades of civil war, and it hasn't had a stable leadership or an effective central government since the fall of former dictator Mohamed Said Barre in 1991. The president says it'll take another 20 years to fix his country. He lists his nation's most pressing and essential issues as security, drought, the rule of law, and the implementation of justice and reconciliation.
This government is the people's. It is for you. And I promise that I will return power to you.
Just days after his inauguration, Britain pledged a $125 million aid package, providing emergency food relief for up to 1 million nearly famished Somalis. President Farmajo is also promising a crackdown on corruption. Election observers believe Somalia's presidential candidates paid out millions of dollars to voters in parliament in the run-up to the election. Farmajo was a surprise winner, defeating his predecessor, Hassan Sheikh Mohamed, and former President Sheikh Sharif Ahmed. To help him turn things around, he's appointed 48-year-old Hassan Ali Kaari, a political newcomer, to the prime minister's post. He's a former aid worker and oil executive with dual Somali and Norwegian citizenship. The militant group Al-Shabaab continues to battle successive United Nations-backed Somali administrations. Many lives were recently lost when a car bomb ripped through this market in Mogadishu, only days after Farmajo's election by parliament. President Farmajo promises a much-needed rebuilding of the national army to meet the ongoing al-Shabaab terror threat. Political observers say that while drought exacerbates famine, it is armed conflict that prevents farmers from planting crops and tending to their livestock. Despite very real climate factors at play, famines are almost always the result of man-made conditions. The violence prevents aid from reaching the needy. In 2011, when the last famine struck Somalia, 260,000 people died. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. For more on the update on Somalia, we are joined by my colleague Haroon Maruf, senior editor of VOA's Somali service. Good afternoon, Haroon.
Good afternoon, Shaka. It's wonderful to be here.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks very much. How about you?
You seem to have an incredibly very, very rare smile. Is it because you have a new prime minister in Mogadishu?
Partially so. There's a lot of enthusiasm in Somalia because of the election of the new president. Obviously, he has appointed a new prime minister who received the endorsement of the parliament today. That was an overwhelming support, endorsement by the parliament. Now the onus and the responsibility is on him to form the next government that will help both of them, the president and the new prime minister, carry out their duties successfully, and the task and the challenges are very magnanimous.
What makes the new prime minister, and in fact, I should also perhaps begin with the new president, what makes the two tick, really? Because it seems to me,
at least on the ground, there is apparent overwhelming support. And yet, the two have hardly, in fact, lived in Somalia for a very, very long time.
The current president used to be a prime minister in 2010, 2011. It was a very brief period. At that time, Al-Shabaab was on the doors of the presidential palace. The thing that people remember about him is how he handled the Somali National Army. Him and the former president, Sheikh Sharif, spent a lot of time with the army. They tried every commanderies. They reformed the army. They started giving them their salary regularly. They have also started giving medical care and support to the families of the soldiers. And that has given them really a lot of support from the public. They also had a message against Al-Shabaab at the time. You know, what happens in Somalia most of the time is the message that you carry. And that has given them really momentum to push Al-Shabaab away from the presidential palace. What also gives him a lot of sympathy is the manner in which he was ousted as prime minister in 2010. There was a political squabble, bickering, and most of the people didn't like how he left. They felt that there were a lot of foreign interference in the political atmosphere, and they hoped that he will have a chance to form and impose himself and on his policies on the ground, and now he has the chance.
When you talk about foreign interference, who are we talking about here?
Well, there are a lot of foreign actors. At the time, if you remember, there were disputes between the president and the Speaker of the Parliament, and the dispute was over the Speaker, was over the Prime Minister, his government. And at that time, because of this whole dispute, this made the government dysfunctional. It crippled all the services. It affected the fight against Al-Shabaab. It affected the proper smooth running of the government. So at that time, there was an interference by the president of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, who called all of them to Kampala, and a deal was struck that somebody has to give up. And at that time, the prime minister said, okay, I'm going to resign. If you can't continue and work for the benefit of the Somali people, I will sacrifice myself. And that's one of the reasons also some people sympathize with him.
Now, President Farmaajo, of course, when he was prime minister, the last time I checked, correct me if I am wrong, I think he actually served in that position for 8 months. Is that correct?
That's correct.
How could the entire country really bank on the fact that this man had an 8 month experience?
This is very interesting. The thing is that, for instance, Somalia, the ordinary Somalis have worked very hard on the ground to live despite the struggles, despite the civil war. The business is thriving. People are still surviving. We have a very strong Somali diaspora community who help those back home. And despite all of this, the people have survived it. And there was always a role for the Somalis in the diaspora. For instance, now we have about almost 40% of the Somali MPs are dual citizens. They have Somali part as well as a foreign passport, including United States, Canada, Europe, from the Middle East and neighboring countries. So it was this desire from the people on the ground also to have people with the right skills who have the first-hand knowledge of how to run a proper government. You know, there is a vacuum in terms of having civil servants, people with the right skills to work and drive the government services forward. And this is where the diaspora come. For instance, a few days ago, we have heard the fire that engulfed Bakara Market, and one of the major services that put out the fire, the Mogadishu firefighters, is the product of initiative from the Somalis on the diaspora. So there is a mark by the communities from the diaspora on what's happening on the ground. And at that time, that's why Farmaajo left a mark on what is happening on the ground. Let me also mention the prime minister is not new to Somalia. He's been an aid worker, although he has a dual citizenship, Somali and Norwegian. He's been in the region, he's been in Somalia, he's been working for the Norwegian Refugee Council. He traveled to lot of regions in the country. In the last 3 years or so, he was involved in oil exploration in the country. Mm-hmm. So he's not entirely new to the situation.
Talk to me about former President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud. You know as well as I do that it is very, very rare that in Africa an incumbent president loses an election in which he is participating. What happened? Is it perhaps because, as some critics have said, this was a candidate supported by neighboring Ethiopia?
Hassan Sheikh Mohamud was praised in the way he conducted himself, in the way he has handed over the power to his successor, Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo, but he was not the first one to hand over the power peacefully. Somalia had three transfers of power in less than 10 years. There were two presidents before him who handed over the power peacefully. And if we go back further in the history, Somalia was the first country in Africa in 1967, in June, where a peaceful transfer of power took place when a democratically elected president took over the power from his predecessor. So that's a positive story of Somalia. Of course, on the other hand, if you come back to Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, one of his main, if I might call, shortcomings was that he had a lot of ambition. He wanted to do a lot for the benefit of the country, but he had a lot of ambitions, a lot of targets, and that has deflected him from focusing on the major issues such as the security, such as securing Mogadishu, such as making sure areas that are taken from Al-Shabaab are secured. There were no local police, national security agents, district councils that were ready to be deployed in these areas where Al-Shabaab are removed from. So there was this dysfunction of the government. And if I might say, also, Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, the former president, would claim that he has done a lot of work in terms of establishing the foundation for the federal system in Somalia, although that federal system itself did not bring peace in most of the area. There were a lot of frictions, a lot of fighting, for instance, in Galkayo, in southwestern Somalia. So it has not all been smooth for him, but he will claim that he has done a lot and that he has rightly been able to hold an election and hand over power peacefully.
Let me ask you this question again. What about some observers who are actually saying that a man that was supported by neighboring Ethiopia could not probably win an election? That in fact, when you think about it, the former president, really, his political albatross was that he was in fact supported by Addis Ababa.
The Ethiopian Prime Minister publicly came out and said he really supports the incumbent, Hassan Sheikh Mohamud. Also, the way he said it did not come very well. He said that he supports the state school. That was his word. And the state school was not going very well with a lot of people. There were a lot of attacks by Al-Shabaab. There were a lot of alleged corruptionists. The government troops were losing ground to Al-Shabaab. AMISOM has been under the receiving end of major attacks by Al-Shabaab. There were relentless attacks in Mogadishu. If you go on the security shortcomings, nothing has changed really since he has taken over the power. So to be also look on whether a president is supported by a neighboring country, Ethiopia also had some problems with Somalia, but Ethiopia has been also involved in Somalia security. It has more than 4,000 troops on the ground in Somalia. Sometimes it brings more troops to Al-Shabaab for its own security interests. But a lot of Somalis also are very apprehensive, and they have some hesitations about the role of Ethiopia, which they say is not always very genuine. But that is for others to decide. One thing that we have to highlight is that Somalia has never re-elected a president. So Hassan Sheikh Mohamud was always going against the odds to prove that he becomes the first president to be re-elected. That did not happen, and we're still waiting for Somalis to re-elect a president.
Well, on that note, thank you very much for interacting with us.
Thank you.
Now we'll pause for a short break, but first we want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa and watch our show live, and don't forget to share it with your friends. Also, we are on Twitter and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Somalia Politics, and we'll share some of your tweets on air later in the show. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ubert, and welcome back. Now joining us here in our Washington studio is Ahmed Issa Awad, the Somali ambassador to the United States. Well, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka. Thank you for inviting us. It's also a pleasure and an honor. I'm ardent follower of your program, and it's good to meet you finally.
Thank you very much. And Faisal Abdi Roble, a writer and analyst on Somali affairs, joins us from the VOA Bureau in Los Angeles, California. Faisal, it's always a pleasure, of course, having you on the show, really.
Thank you, Shaka. I'm also honored to be your guest for the second time on this program, and doubly honored to be in this program with Honorable Ambassador Ahmed Awad, who is a friend.
Well, of course, you're taking me back, in a sense, nostalgically, because walking back in memory lane, I remember you as a very, very young man on the campus of the UCLA in Westwood.
Yes, and those are all the good days when the African student body at UCLA, particularly the graduate program, was notable. In particular, the Somali student body was significant, and those were good old days we will always remember.
Very interesting. Let me come to you immediately, Mr. Ambassador. What is your immediate reaction, especially given that you now have a new prime minister in Mogadishu, and probably that is one of the most important pieces, frankly, that has to come in place in order for the government to begin the business of governing.
Oshaka, before I answer your question, let me also express my delight to be on the same program with my friend, Faisal Roble, and my also friend and colleague, the journalist for the Voice of America, to whom we just listened to.
You're all brothers.
Yeah, we're all brothers. We're all friends.
And after all, I remember, and I took this very seriously in my political science classes, that Somalia was one of the few countries on Africa, if not the world, where there are, in fact, no tribes. They are basically clans, speak one language, and pretty much belong to same religion. That was a nation, not a nation state.
I think Faisal and Harun will agree with you on that. It's certainly the truth. And we are one people, you know. Yes, it's true.
One people, but at one time you spent more than 20 years without a central government. Why?
Well, it's a good question. We also pondered on that. I guess if you look at it positively, you can say that even a family has its own bad days.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the history is full of nations who are made up of one people who have gone through difficulty times, who landed on difficult times. But as you can see, and as your thanks, by the way, for this program that sheds light on the progress we are making, we look forward to the future. And I think we prefer to talk more of the future than the past. Mistakes happen.
Mm-hmm.
We have fallen down. But the wisdom is not why we fell down, but how we get up and recover. And it seems to me that we are recovering very well.
Very interesting. Faisal, there are some people who have actually been characterizing your country as a failed state, or a failed country for that matter. And yet, when you think about it, there are a lot of other aspects of human life that, in fact, have always really taken place in Somalia, despite the fact that there was no central government. For example, I think I know for sure that when it comes to the telephone industry, it's probably one of the most lucrative anywhere in the world. So is it, in fact, or was it a failed state, or was it a collapsed state, as some people would like to say, a collapsed state rather than a failed state?
I think I would agree with you with the latter definition, in that the state collapsed, but the nation state of Somalia, where if you mean state, all those institutions that take care of the collective well-being of the society, that did not fail. I think the central state collapsed, and Somalia has always been, according to some academics, in search of a nation state. Earlier on, you touched Somalis being a nation, but the state being weak. And indeed, yes, it has always been a nation that's in search of a nation state, mainly due to the everlasting impacts, colonial divisions of Africa, but particularly colonial partition of Somalia left behind. So what you had in 1960 was a quick formation of two parties of the Somali nation state. And since that day on, Somalia was in search of a solid state, but it formed a sort of modicum state in the 1960s, and that couldn't stand the vagaries of a dictatorship that came to power in 1969, and as you alluded, that collapsed. But I think many other institutions, such as the writing of the Somali script, a lot of other traditional mechanisms that that worked on conflict resolution, all stayed behind. Local governance re-emerged from villages and regions and cities that have proven to be more peaceful than Mogadishu, where the state collapsed. So I tend to agree with you that it was not a failed nation state. It was a state, post-colonial state, that collapsed. And as the ambassador alluded to, that is now being reconstructed, hopefully in a better light this time than in the past.
What about the apparent increased role of the diaspora? It looks like the diaspora is apparently almost dominating the politics, frankly, of their country. The last time I checked, about two-thirds of the presidential candidates, for example, were in fact from the diaspora. I also gather that parliament is about a third the diaspora. And the gentleman that is seated next to me here, who is the Somali ambassador to the United States, is also from the diaspora via Canada.
You're right. And not to mention the fact that both the president and the newly elected, nominated prime minister are both from the diaspora, as well as the Speaker of the House. So, I think this is, again, speaking to the collapsed state where the middle class and the petty bourgeoisie of the nation left the country and reclaimed security and peace in other lands, but never abandoned their nation and their country. In addition to being a diaspora and being politically active, that community you mentioned also repatriates $1.5 billion annually, which has some sort of bearing on the stability of the livelihood of Somalis. And despite the collapsed state, the per capita income of Somalis compared to many African countries is very high, simply because of that money repatriated by the diaspora. And I want to mention the fact that the telephone companies as well as the hawala companies are the big beneficiaries. And a recommendation that I just sent to the president and the prime minister delineates a sort of recommendation to look into this hawala and telephone companies to see as a source for major significant revenue for the new state and the new government. So the diaspora is effective. It will play a significant role. And as we speak, probably today, I may highlight some of my hopes to see how the Somali-American diaspora can play a significant role in ameliorating the current American isolationism towards Africa, but particularly in the case of Somalia. So, yes, they are very effective, very helpful, and very integral to the reconstruction of Somalia.
Ambassador Awad, given the central role that the Somali diaspora is now playing in the affairs of your country, would it be accurate to say that perhaps this is, in fact, a vote of confidence of the people of Somalia in the diaspora?
The short answer is yes. And as Faisal have rightly and articulately mentioned, there is no actually the distinction between the diaspora and those inside the country is very thin. So as I told you, the diaspora's contribution, you already pointed out, the remittance of mm-hmm. the diaspora mm-hmm. has what sustained or rather supported the resilience of the Somali people. You know, people talk about the collapse of the modern state or the Westphalian model. But the Somali people have shown resilience, have shown entrepreneurship, both those who remain inside the country and those who've been forced outside. Mm-hmm. By the way, all of us, including those in the parliament that you mentioned, Faisal, myself, the president, the prime minister, we have not been diaspora in the sense that we've been away from home. We were actively involved in the social, political, and cultural aspects of the country.
You continue to interact.
Oh yeah. So we did that. We were not isolated from our home country. So, but you are right. The diaspora is the role of the diaspora is acknowledged. But this distinction that may come to mind when we talk diaspora is not. Actually, may not be even relevant in Somalia.
I see. Well, you're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa live from Washington. It's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Thanks, Shaka. We received tremendous feedback on all our social media platforms to this week's question. Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, better known as Farmajo, took the oath of office in Mogadishu last Wednesday in a ceremony where he pledged to begin stabilizing the war-ravaged country, but warned the task will take many years. This leads us to our question of the week, which asked, what issues would you like to see new Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed tackle first? Well, before we begin, I'd like to thank all our audience for using our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA Somalia Politics. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of, let's go to a tweet from Delanyo Agbe, who tweets, he must tackle security, which is essential to the economic growth of any nation. Secondly, job creation. And we have another tweet from Emmanuel Kachele, who writes, lead the country to the peace. Give what common people want. And now to our comment of the week from Facebook fan Obuba Amafo Kadua in Accra, Ghana, who writes, unity and security should be President Mohamed's major priority. He needs to resolve all religious, tribal, or clans differences to ensure peace and stability. If this is done, he'll be able to strengthen national security to overpower al-Shabaab for smooth governance in Somalia. Now let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Thomas Toddy, who writes, President Mohamed's major task is to change the mindset of Islamic fundamentalists, to understand democracy in a modern world, taking lessons from the developed Islamic countries. And our last Facebook comment comes from Alkali Ibro in Somaliland, who writes, the president should solve the problems in Somalia, particularly the security. In Mogadishu, the people do not have peace and stability, so the first step must be establishing peace. Well, thanks to our viewers and listeners for sharing your thoughts with us. A reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate with us. Please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Interact with our show as it's live on Facebook. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV 2 Africa and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss International Women's Day. It's also known as the United Nations Day for Women's Rights and International Peace, celebrating women's achievements throughout history. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Well, that does it for today's social media segment. Shaka, you have a lot of social media comments to discuss. Back to you.
Well, thank you very much, Ayen, and of course, our distinguished guest today, Ahmed Issa Awad, the Somali ambassador to the United States, and Faisal Abdi Roble, writer and analyst on Somali affairs, who joins us from our Los Angeles bureau. Well, gentlemen, again, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Shaka. It's an honor for us.
You're most welcome. You listened to the social media comments. Your reaction?
Well, I think those are fair, fair comments. Mm-hmm. Those challenges are real and true in Somalia, and the president has already outlined, mentioned them. These challenges are for any country, but in particular for a country like Somalia, which is now, recollecting itself and establishing its institutions. So I agree with the comments, and the president has already outlined that those are some of the things, priorities that he will focus on. Mm-hmm. Peace, security, and creation of jobs and opportunities for the majority of the Somalis who are youth, and also addressing the question of the violent extremists, Al-Shabaab, both trying to defeat them militarily. Mm-hmm. They insist on creating havoc in the country. They have already been on the doldrums, being almost weakened, but also by the offer he gave them, that those who wanted to rejoin the Somali society and denounce violence, they're welcome, and they have a role to play, an opportunity to rebuild the country.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Roble?
Yeah, I just joined a company with the ambassador's assessment of the sequencing of the issues that we heard in the social media, stability, peace, fairness in governance, and all those are issues. Shaka, what caught my attention is how the African audience, particularly your audience, has pan-Africanized the Somali issue. I never expected a Ghanaian or a Ugandan or another African afar from Somalia would be so intimate to the question of Somalia. And this is a level where the African audience have reached, that we are no longer compartmentalized in terms of our issues and problems. But I think Africa is becoming that village that its dreamers and founders at once dreamed of. So if you look at the involvement of African countries within that context, it's positive that we have AMISOM and other African countries. However, if you can manage to control the extrajudicial, extraterritorial intervention of frontline countries such as Kenya and Ethiopia, if you take that element out, I think I am hopeful in the way that African audience and their larger crowd have been watching and paying attention to the Somalia fiasco, and that gives me a lot of hope beyond the questions that they raised.
If you
allow me, I will also want to add my voice to this reaction of the Africans to the development in Somalia. It actually heartens me, and in support of the observation that relevant observation that the Faisal made, all the African ambassadors have came to me congratulating me. I'm the chair of the African ambassadors group,
right,
for this period, this next 3 months. And every African ambassador has come to me. And it looks that they have pride in Somalia succeeding. For a long time, we have been, talked as, a failed country, terrorism, droughts, starvation, piracy, all the negatives that go with it. Right now, it seems to me that the Africans are taking pride in the progress that Somalia is making, at least in its political transition and handover of power in peaceful way. So we hope that the Somalis and their government will not fail this hope invested in Somalia by their African brothers and sisters.
Now, President Farmajo has said that his priorities, among other things, is fighting corruption and restoring peace and stability in the country. You know as well as I do that the government in Mogadishu so far has not been able to improve, really, the security situation. If somebody asked you, why is Al-Shabaab still the biggest threat to the government, what would you say?
Yeah, Shaka, I don't mean to contradict what observers and others are saying, but the perception is sometimes not the whole picture. Actually, Somali, majority of Somalia is peaceful, mm-hmm. including Mogadishu. I've been in Mogadishu a few months ago. And when you are in Mogadishu, the incident is that Shabab, suicide bombings, is not as far in between. They're not happening anymore. I want to bring to your attention that when President Farmaajo was a prime minister in 2010, Shabab controlled almost more than half of the country. Mm-hmm. Today, Shabab doesn't control any significant
territory. But when it comes to...
But that's a progress. Now, in terms of this suicide bombing, this is spectacular suicide bombings they're doing, it is not. Mogadishu is a country, is a city of over 2 million people. People are, going through their life normally. If you go today to Mogadishu, I hope you visit Somalia and Mogadishu soon for you to see it on your own eyes.
I would like
progress is happening, and I think we should acknowledge and not focus on as much as we wanted to eliminate any insecurity. But the country has been making progress, and the president made it clear that it's one of his priorities.
Faisal, would you agree with your colleague here, Ambassador Wad, despite, frankly, the reported effective guerrilla tactics of Al-Shabaab?
Well, in a sense, what the ambassador is outlining in general is correct in the sense that even when Hassan Sheikh Mohamud took power in 2012, there were control is within the city and boulevards and streets that Al-Shabaab controlled. Less than a quarter of a mile of the presidential palace, people used to be stopped by Al-Shabaab troops to exact some taxation and money, not to mention that Bakaraha was under. So if Hassan gets any credit, it's how he eliminated those controls out of Mogadishu. And that is a success. However, I think a nation's security and stability needs to be looked at within the greater frame of reference, which is the nation, is the country controlling its borders and boundaries of the nation? Are there multiple troops such as Al-Shabaab that are loitering around freely and even passing Sharia judgments and practicing that kind of law in significant parts of the country? I think when you look at that, we have a long way to go. I like not to sugarcoat. Somalia will not stabilize its structure without defeating Al-Shabaab, not only in Mogadishu, which is a credit that needs to be underlined, but defeating Al-Shabaab and literally ejecting out of the Somalic territory. That is when the nation state can claim to have recovered from the collapse. Now, looking at what we came from, it's really something to feel proud of. The question is, would we go where we want? And as you mentioned, corruption plays a significant role in the perpetuation of Al-Shabaab's operations. You have to understand that when Somalia broke down, the United Islamic Court took power and literally dominated the political space of Somalia. And you have a lot of Islamic radical type sympathizers still outside the ranks of Al-Shabaab. They may be in the government, they may be in the money exchange businesses, they may be in the regular trades and businesses of the nation. So it will take a while to really restore the normal Sunni-based Somali state in a full functioning manner. But I think it has to be a priority for Farmaajo and Khayre, the new prime minister, to defeat the guerrilla operations of Al-Shabaab that is abundantly
practicing their law in even few miles from the capital city.
But do we really know, and I'm talking about at the moment, do we really know the fundamental root causes of the problem?
Yes, I think, in my opinion, the fundamental root cause of the problem is a lack of a fair, well-functioning, equitable government. Somalia has always been a nation that had a sort of a combined constitution, one borrowed from the Western system and one from the Islamic Sharia system, and the two coexisted very amicably for the consumption of the Somali citizen. I think what the collapse of the Barre regime brought is a vented out grievances that has multi-layers. And I think any government that comes into Somalia needs to attend to these grievances, primarily creating jobs and occupations for the youth, which is almost 65% of the population. Unless you occupy the minds and hands of that young population, Somalia would be a very fertile ground for any kind of revolt, whether it is Islamic radical system or even if you go into all these communist subversive movements. Movements always thrive on dissatisfied, unemployed, underemployed youth, and Ethiopia faced that in the 70s and 80s with the Red Terror and all that. Somalia, post-Barre's collapse, has faced that. And those youth that are still loitering around Mogadishu streets and Hargeisa and Bosaso. So I think once Farmaccio addresses the emergency situation is of corruption and famine, there needs to be a serious thinking around the issue of job creation for the youth.
Mr. Ambassador, what about the fact that AMISOM, for example, has been in Mogadishu, or in Somalia for that matter, for almost 10 years? I say this because Uganda, the Ugandan contingent, actually went to Somalia in 2007. And up to now, can you convince anybody sincerely that the Somali government, the Somali armed forces, for example, have not yet been trained, have not yet gotten, frankly, the capacity to do the job as an institution? Because when we're talking about AMISOM, is it open-ended? Does it have an exit strategy? Or is it going to be there indefinitely?
Well, Shaka, that's a very good question and very relevant, timely. And this question that many Somalis also discuss, by the way, is a question that the successive Somali governments have raised. The last government led by President Hassan Sheikh was raising that. And I think, I'm sure, the current administration will raise. Now, but I should start by, first of all, acknowledging the contribution that the African forces, AMISOM, and all our brotherly African countries have made to stabilizing Somalia, mm-hmm. and to taking part in defeating Al-Shabaab. Mm-hmm. That is a fact that we Somalis should acknowledge and be grateful to, and thank for Africa for that. Mm-hmm. Now, however, I think it's a time is now for these forces to phase out, and to the Somali national security forces to be strengthened, and I think that is the priority of the president, and I also know that this is also the intention, the plans of the AU and the intention of the contributing countries. My guess is that there will be a phase-out period for these AMISOMs, mm. hoping that by 2018 you will have a gradual phase-out of the AMISOM forces, and Somali national forces, security forces, taking their place and controlling the country. So we are hopeful. It's part of the progress that we are making, thanks to the AMISOM and African Union. We should see them as a positive contribution. But as you said, It's about time.
Surely there should be an exit strategy.
Yeah, I think the strategy has been worked out. Let me give the opportunity to face something else.
If I may jump in, I think while Somalis are grateful to those countries that have contributed to the AMISOM troops, particularly countries that you, like Uganda, that went above and beyond the requirement of helping Somalis, we need to understand two things. One, it's not fair to the Ugandan mother to lose, or mothers to lose, that many soldiers overseas and outside Uganda. Neighbors and friends and relatives can just help you so much. And I think some of them even paid the ultimate. But I think it's not fair. It's about time that Somali boys and daughters take over that and do their fair share. And while I say that, we have to also recognize the fact that Somalis have not been given the chance to also play the patriotic, nationalistic role that they could have played in this issue. The economy, which is supposedly pumped into the AMISOM infrastructures and salaries, a small portion of that could have established a robust 40,000-plus Somali National Army that could have gone to the woods and the outside the cities, and probably by now could have easily done a dent. So it would have been a win-win situation for our brothers in Uganda and other African countries, but also for us, to not really lose lives when it's not necessary for the Ugandan soldier, but at the same time, for Somalis to have done a better job. Only a better job because they know the terrain, they know the system, they know the routes, they know the villages, they know the, you know. So I think we have spent so much energy, with a little return. I would say they have done great job around Mogadishu, but they have done a lousy job outside Mogadishu. And I think it's about time to take a stock of what happened and what did not happen and come up with the right course of action for both of us.
You talked about, how the Ugandan mother, and of course you might add the Burundi or Djibouti or
yes,
Ethiopia and other, countries that are contributing to AMISOM, how they should, in fact, fear or worry about the fact that their children are in harm's way. But what about another point of view that, on the contrary, that in fact a lot of these people are not in a hurry to leave because the project has in fact become a cash cow?
So, and you're right. I mean, those of us who are aware of international aid as a cottage industry know that the dollar sent from, say, anywhere in the West all the way to Nairobi gets snatched piece by piece before it hits, the project or whatever they intended to do. So it's a cash cow. It's a cash cow for some of those African leaders who probably would like to divert the attention and take some of their soldiers away and get payment. I totally agree with you, and that's why I'm saying that the whole AMISOM project has outlived. We have the experience, outlived its significance. We have the experience of Congo, which we talked about last time when I was your guest, how a UN mission on peace and stability never ends once it starts. We still have the Middle Eastern mission from the UN that started way back in the 1960s, is still in operation, although in a smaller. So I think most of Africans, in particular those countries that contributed, the troops and Somalis, share one common view, and that is it's about time to end this program in a very phased way, as the ambassador implied to, and come up with a national alternative to liberate the country from Al-Shabaab.
Mr. Ambassador?
Sure. So as we discussed AMISOM and its role, we don't want to lose sight of the fact that the Somali forces have already been contributing and have been sacrificing. Many Somali sons and daughters have already died and been killed on the front. while supporting and working shoulder with the Amisom. Mm-hmm. So as we were discussing the Amisom and what they have the contributions they have made, where they have fallen short, what is the exit strategy, which I'm sure now is in place and we will see soon. But we should acknowledge that while we need a more robust, well-trained, well-equipped, well-paid Somali national forces, mm-hmm. Somalis have already been in the field, defeating Shabab and working with the AMISOM. I just don't want to leave the impression that there was no Somali forces already fighting or taking part in securing the peace and security of their country.
What about some reports that there are some instances, for example, where some Somali trained soldiers by AMISOM and indeed, in fact, by some international groups like the Pentagon, sometimes after graduating, they actually defect to Al-Shabaab. And some of the Somali soldiers and AMISOM soldiers sometimes are involved in selling weapons to Al-Shabaab. Have you heard about that?
Shaka, I think these kinds of information reports are if any, exaggerated. There may be one or two incidents. But as I was telling you, Shabab is the one that's now, suffering from defections. Just as the president was elected and inaugurated, mm-hmm. some of their key leaders were defected and heeded the president's appeal to them, mm-hmm. and gave themselves up to the Somali forces. At one point, at the beginning, when Shabab were strong, they could have, before their perverted ideology has been exposed by the Somali people, before they have been defeated militarily, and I use this word, with conscience, that mm-hmm. they have been militarily defeated, notwithstanding the spectacular attacks they're doing.
Technically defeated. Nigerian President Muhammad Buhari would like to say about Boko Haram.
Yeah. So what remains now is their targeting of the innocent people and vulnerable places. But since that early days, the reverse is what's happening. The people are deserting Shabab and joining Somali forces.
Very interesting. In 30 seconds, any lessons that other African countries could learn from your experience, especially given that for 20 years you had no central government, but you survived?
Yeah, so I think it shows the resiliency, the entrepreneurship of the Somali people. Not only we survived, actually we thrived. Somalia today, if you from the north to the south and in between,
yes.
you have major centuries, you have universities, you have people going their life. Yeah.
Unfortunately, time happens sure. not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Ahmed Issa Award, the Somali ambassador to the United States, and Faisal Abdi Roble, writer and analyst, who joined us from Los Angeles. Thanks to our feed stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Sabate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Somalia. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.